It's the month of May, and it's Friday the 13th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Coming up, Brazil's political crisis deepens as the president is suspended from office. Donald Trump works to bring Republicans around for his bid for the White House.
The focus is on the countries that are facilitating that corruption.
National leaders gather to fight corruption. Also ahead, another big pop star crosses the country. It's all on today's International Edition. Brazilian senators have voted to suspend President Dilma Rousseff from office. The lawmakers are preparing to try her on charges of manipulating the national budget to boost her 2014 re-election campaign. The 68-year-old leftist accused her opponents of sabotaging her government, saying respect for democracy and the country's constitution were at stake. Rousseff's vice president, Michel Temer, has turned against her, and he will take over the presidency in the interim, less than 3 months before the 2016 Summer Olympics, which open in Rio de Janeiro. He also faces the country's worst recession in decades amid Brazil's battle with a deadly outbreak of the Zika mosquito virus. Latin American specialist Sean Burgess of the Australia National University explains to VOA's Victor Beatty the cause of Ms. Rousseff's political undoing.
President Dilma Rousseff is being impeached for essentially fiscal impropriety. As she approached the election in 2014, it was pretty clear that the economy was not doing as well as she had hoped, and so she engaged in some creative accounting to try and make the situation look better. This is standard practice. You see pretty much every president, mayor, governor in Brazil do it. In fact, one of the senators today said we should be impeaching almost everybody who's been elected in the country. The difference with Dilma was in scale. She went out into the billions, whereas before it had been in the case of the hundreds of millions. So it was a much larger act, but it's still questionable whether it was actually illegal. That's the bit that's still up for debate.
She herself admitted that this is going to be history in the making in Brazil. How historical is this?
This has got the potential to be one of those opening of Pandora's box moments, that she's being impeached for political reasons. And if you can do it this quickly in this instance, what's going to happen to the next person who has some political popularity problems, driving through policy that's maybe not popular but might be necessary? Are they going to get impeached too? And really what this is all highlighting right now is the extent to which some of the fundamentals of the Brazilian political process are broken and how the representative nature of the institutions is not serving the people, and therefore you have politicians acting in their own best interests. One way to read what's going on with this impeachment process is when you look at the number of individuals in Congress who are facing trial or conviction for serious crimes, particularly embezzlement, corruption, and bribery, and so on. One way to read this whole process is an attempt by these individuals to create so much mud and so much storm that the prosecutors and the investigators never get the time to get around to dealing with them. So it's a diversionary tactic by a lot of these people to try and protect themselves.
Of course, this process may drag on for months, and what impact will it have on the economy? Also, the Olympics coming up in August.
The economy may turn out okay from this. Michel Temer has assembled his cabinet. It looks like he's going to have Fernando Meirelles, who is the former central bank head, is going to be the finance minister, and he's got one of the chief economists from, I think it's Itaú Banco, which is a big, very successful private bank, is rumored to be ready to go in to take over the central bank. Congress will probably play ball with Temer if there's any sense of party discipline, because it's his party that's generated this and got him in place. So we may find some sense of at least stability in the economy, although that's not certain. The Olympic Games is another question, and I don't think that the federal level is what we need to be worrying about so much in the Olympic Games as it is the state and the municipal level in Rio. And that's a whole other kettle of fish with all sorts of potential to have problems. But the reality is most of the facilities are mostly built, most of the procedures are in place. And tellingly, the only two ministers that Dilma has said she's not going to fire if this process goes through is the head of the central bank and the sport minister.
Sean Burgess says Ms. Rousseff's career is probably over and 13 years of leftist Workers' Party rule is ending. He says Brazil is entering a period of political uncertainty, with Mr. Temer barred from seeking re-election for electoral malfeasance. He says while Brazil's democracy will survive and mass protests are not likely, Brasilia is entering a period of paralysis for the foreseeable future. Well, we turn now to what's trending online. No paralysis there. Always a lot of action. We have our social media correspondent, G. Abby Lee, here in the studio. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
A lot of people are talking about someone we haven't heard from in a while, George Zimmerman and his gun. What's the latest?
Oh, his name is once again trending on social media. As you know, he's a former Neighborhood Watch volunteer who killed an unarmed black teenager in Florida back in 2012. People are talking about him again because he tried to auction off the gun he used to commit the crime.
That's kind of astounding. How did that go?
Well, not too well. He listed the gun on a website, but that item became unavailable Thursday morning when the auction was scheduled to begin. The bidding price for the weapon started at $5,000.
What was the online reaction like?
On Facebook, Fox News was one of the first media outlets to post about the canceled auction, and top comments to that post were critical of Zimmerman. One person wrote, "While auctioning off the item is legal, he doesn't understand why Zimmerman didn't dispose of the gun or try to do something positive since the trial." Many other people also noted trying to make money from selling a weapon that killed an innocent person is distasteful.
I can't imagine there were many, but any positive responses?
Well, from Zimmerman himself. He appeared on local television on the same day and said, "What I've decided to do is not cower," he said. That's response to when he was getting death threats after he listed the item. He added, "I am a free American. I can do what I want with my possessions."
All right. Well, anything else trending today on social media?
Yep. Actor Johnny Depp appeared on UK television and said, if elected, Donald Trump would be the actual last president of the United States. He added, "It just won't work after that." Trump has yet to comment on that, but he did come up with a new nickname. He began calling Democratic contender Bernie Sanders as Crazy Bernie. That's in addition to Lying Ted, Crooked Hillary, Little Marco, and more. Jim, back to you.
Well, a lot of nicknames for all the people around him. It'll be interesting to see if he has nicknames for his cabinet members, too. Thanks for the wrap-up, G. You can tweet your questions and your comments to @VOA_IE. If you like, you may tag me and G on those tweets. We are @VOA Stevenson and @GAbbyLee. Here are some of the top stories that are trending now in Asia and that we're following here. Pakistan closes main border crossing with Afghanistan. Indian tycoons' defaulted loans highlight massive debt problem. Debris found in South Africa is almost certainly from flight MH370. Nissan and Mitsubishi confirm a $2 billion deal. Central and South Asian leaders pursue peace through electricity. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at the voanews.com website, also on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. The presumptive U.S. Republican presidential nominee, real estate mogul Donald Trump, and the party's top elected official, House of Representatives Speaker Paul Ryan, met Thursday in Washington as they try to unite in their campaign against the likely Democratic nominee, former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. VOA senior national correspondent Jim Malone is with us, as it seemed to be a positive step in the direction Donald Trump needs to go.
And according to the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, he was encouraged by this initial meeting. He's indicating there's going to be more meetings. He was frank about the fact that they still disagree over certain policy initiatives. I think it'll be a positive day viewed by the Trump people because they needed to be seen to be pulling the party together. And this is not going to be done in one day. I think everyone acknowledges that. But Trump had a series of meetings, beginning with Paul Ryan and the Republican National Chairman, Reince Priebus. Obviously, Priebus is trying to play a role in facilitating the coming together here. And I've seen in the last few days other key Republicans, say Bob Corker, the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, is more open now to Trump as the presumptive nominee, saying people need to chill and not be so critical of the sort of lack of specific policy initiatives, especially on foreign policy, which everyone wants to see more about that.
This is not an unusual process in presidential political campaigns. But in Trump's case, this has really been rather an acidic campaign.
It is a little unusual in this sense. Usually when there's a recognized nominee in waiting, whether it's John McCain, George W. Bush in 2000, Mitt Romney 4 years ago, usually the party infrastructure, the senior leaders in Congress and of the party nationally, are quick to come to that person's support. What may take time is the rivals who were defeated in the primaries. That may take a little longer. Well, we're seeing now Ted Cruz is nowhere close, I don't think, at this point, to an endorsement of Trump. Marco Rubio is backing away from that. We haven't heard much from John Kasich. But Trump has to work on the party leadership, especially members of Congress, the Speaker of the House, the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. That they usually don't have to expend that much effort to get them on their team. This shows you the divide that Trump has caused within the Republican Party, and it shows you the work that's left to be done to mend it. But certainly here on Thursday, you could say they had a beginning, and according to both sides, it was successful.
Speaker Ryan really came under a lot of pressure when he said he would not endorse Trump initially. Some of the Republican heavyweights and some big donors said, oh, this could be the end of your career because you're not falling in line with the presumptive nominee.
Yeah, one of the loudest voices on that was Sarah Palin, the former vice presidential candidate in 2008, former Alaska governor. Palin is supporting an opponent of Ryan who's running in the Republican primaries in Wisconsin. We'll see how that works out. But what's also clear from today, you know, there was no quick endorsement by Paul Ryan. And I think this is emblematic of what we're going to see writ large in the Republican Party. And of course, the Democrats would love for the Republicans to get to their convention in Cleveland and still be disunited, still be fractured. But I think we're going to see a lot of work between now and then to bring the party together. And I think what happened today was an important first step.
And an interesting little caveat, it may not necessarily be important, but we haven't heard from Donald Trump, at least vocally. A couple of little tweets just said, oh, I had a great day in D.C., and that was it. Now,
well, I did see him wave once to reporters up on Capitol Hill, and then he was flashing a thumbs-up sign as he drove past in one of those tinted glass SUVs headed for the airport. But, yeah, that may show a certain element of discipline that we don't often see from Donald Trump. After all, things pretty much went his way today. A lot of positive comments from some key Republican players in Washington. Why not let those carry the day?
We always carry the day with a great insight from VOA senior national correspondent Jim Malone. Jim, thank you for stopping by the studio.
Thank you, Jim.
Thursday's anti-corruption summit in London was a moment of introspection for the world's political elite, whose banking systems and real estate markets have often provided a haven for billions of dollars in stolen money. The summit brought together leaders of developing nations, but much of the focus was on the role of countries like Britain and the United States and are playing in helping corrupt leaders hide their stolen money. VOA Europe correspondent Luis Ramirez was briefed by my International Edition colleague Susan Yaki a short time ago as leaders drew a strong connection between corruption and extremism.
What we have is nations pledging to take concrete action to do more to identify, to expose, and to punish corruption. Each country is committing to provide a report on what its efforts are. Now, what is different about this summit is that the focus was off the nations that are typically blamed for corruption, nations like Afghanistan, Nigeria, long known for very bad corruption records. The focus is on the countries that are facilitating that corruption, countries like Britain and the United States, whose banks and real estate markets are places where the stolen money is deposited.
Well, this also comes in light of the Panama Papers.
Well, the Panama Papers showed the world just how the rich and powerful hide their money. Sometimes it's money that's honestly earned, sometimes it's not. In any case, it is hidden to avoid paying taxes. That is something that world leaders are very concerned about. What it is it's a concern about legitimacy, how the perception that leaders are not paying their fair share in taxes, are hiding money, are hiding money that in some cases stolen from the countries that that they come from, and then put into banks in places like Britain and the United States. It's funny that this summit is being held in London, which is known as a tax haven in the world. The price of real estate in London has been driven up quite dramatically, largely from investments by Russian oligarchs. And so that certainly is cause for concern among British politicians and for David Cameron, who definitely sees a political risk at allowing this to go on and being seen as though he is not doing anything about it.
And I understand Secretary Kerry had a few words to say. Can you share details?
Secretary Kerry had some very interesting remarks where he equated the fight against corruption to the fight against extremism, through a very, very direct line between the issue of corruption and the issue of extremism. He pointed to the example of Tunisia, of course, the birthplace of the Arab Spring in 2011, demonstrations there that quickly turned violent and resulted in the ouster of a very corrupt government. Those demonstrations began out of the anger of a fruit vendor who was so fed up with having the police shake him down that he, in protest, set himself on fire. This touched off the Arab Spring. The rest is history, much of it unfortunate history, because, of course, those rebellions spread to places like Libya and Syria that are now hotbeds for extremism.
Is there a reason why the conference was held now?
It follows the revelations of the Panama Papers, which certainly raised awareness in the world and especially in Britain at, again, how the rich and powerful hide their money and just the extent of world corruption. The focus has always been on developing countries, on what corrupt African generals and dictators and dictators in Latin America, places like that, are have been doing with the money they steal. The focus now on exactly how it's put to work and the role that nations like the United States and Britain play in helping them hide it.
VOA Europe correspondent Luis Ramirez. You can visit voanews.com for more on this story, and be sure to follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. And like us on Facebook at VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. From Bob Dylan and the Beatles to Snoop Dogg, non-country artists doing country music is really nothing new. This year, frontman for the rock band Aerosmith, Steven Tyler, has created quite a buzz for his forthcoming country project, and it's complete with a new tour. Nikki Strong of VOA Music joins International Edition's Sarah Williams to tell us what he has in store.
Send your kisses my way. Bring your sweetheart to me.
First off, Nikki, why did Steven Tyler decide to go country?
Well, he says he has listened to country music as a child, so it's always been a part of him. And what made him actually pursue country was his visit to Nashville a couple of years ago. He went for a couple of award shows and fell in love with the place. And he was offered a deal by Big Machine Label Group. That's a major group. Taylor Swift is on their roster, as well as Tim McGraw. And here we are. He has just about finished up the album and just announced a tour in support of it. He says he thinks country is the new rock and roll. Everyone is trying to stretch out. Apparently, that's what he's doing.
Well, tell us about this tour.
It's called Out on a Limb, which many think is appropriate. I think so. It will feature the band Loving Mary. It kicks off July 2nd through September 13th. It goes across the U.S. and hits Toronto as well. It has been described as an intimate tour where he will do new versions of Aerosmith songs. He will share stories behind the songs, as well as feature cuts from his forthcoming country project. He did say that he would not be doing countrified Aerosmith song on tour. He said, "Walk This Way with a banjo is ridiculous."
Dream on. Whatever.
Exactly.
So how does Aerosmith feel about this?
Well, they feel somewhat abandoned by him since he scrapped their previously scheduled 2016 tour to pursue this project. And so far, some members of Aerosmith say they are not impressed with the country music he has released thus far. Not sure if the fans feel the same way. We have yet to see Tyler's journey into country, you know, if it'll really take off. So far, the promotion machine is in full effect, but the jury is out as to whether country music fans will really love his work or not. His first single, Love Is Your Name, did hit the charts, but it didn't do much. I think people will first be curious, but then afterwards, if the songs don't resonate, the project will flop. I think doing the tour will give him an opportunity to see how people respond to the new material, which I think is smart. So we'll see. He definitely has me intrigued.
All right. Well, you can get more country news and music on Country Hits USA with Nikki Strong on VOA One. You can also submit your comments, questions, and requests on VOA One's social media accounts. On Twitter, it's VOA_music, and on Facebook, it's simply VOA Music. Thanks, Nikki.
You're welcome.
Tell me all your stories. Leave some open for me. Write your name into
You've been listening to International Edition. We're always found at our website, voanews.com. We're also on Facebook. VOA Now is the place to go. And you can follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Carl Starling. I'm Jim Stevenson. We are all in Washington at the moment. We thank you for joining us. Come back again when you can. And we hope you have a great day ahead.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Freedom of the press continues to be under assault in Turkey. Most recently, Can Dündar, editor-in-chief of the leading opposition newspaper Cumhuriyet, and Erdem Gül, the publication's Ankara bureau chief, were sentenced to prison after being convicted of leaking state secrets. State Department spokesperson John Kirby expressed concern over the guilty verdicts issued by the Turkish court, calling on Turkish authorities to support an independent and unfettered media, which is an essential element of any democratic, open society. Meanwhile, Turkey's independent communication network media released a report for the first quarter of 2016, stating that 174 members of the press were either fired or forced to quit, while 28 journalists and 10 publishers were currently under arrest. Turkey was also recently listed by U.S.-based think tank Freedom House as not free in their 2016 Freedom of the Press report. Its score rose 6 points, signifying a deteriorating trend. As Turkey's friend and NATO ally, said Mr. Kirby, we again urge Turkey to abide by its constitutional and OSCE commitments to fundamental principles of democracy, including due process, judicial independence, and freedom of expression. These principles are key elements of every healthy democracy and are enshrined in the Turkish Constitution.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.